See, when I was in university, before it was ever a word, I don't know why, where it came from, but I swear I invented the term smack talking. And again, it was just one of those things that came out by accident. Like, I meant to say a different word. Now it's a thing. I started it.
Hello and welcome to the Two Hosers Photo Show. This is episode 32, if you're keeping track in your scorebook at home.
I am.
That was Adam, you just heard, from Vancouver, Canada. Adam, I hadn't introduced you yet, so I hope people aren't too confused.
I like being introduced.
My name is Alan, and as usual, I am in Tübingen, Germany. And we are doing this via the Skype.
Yes.
I don't want to give away too many of the trade secrets, but that's how we do this. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
What do I have to say?
I don't know. I cut you off. I thought I cut you off there.
No, I didn't really have anything to say.
Well, thanks for ruining the flow.
It's going to be smooth sailing from here on out.
So what's this week's episode called? I got it.
Deciding Exposure?
Yeah, that's what it is. I don't know if that's even like a... That sounds like a sitcom from the 80s.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused by the title myself.
I couldn't think of anything better.
Okay, well, can you explain it?
Well, we're gonna talk about last week's challenge. Kind of feeds into this, and we're gonna talk about how we come to a decision on what we want our exposure to be. And so, give a better suggestion.
How do we decide exposure?
Too late. Deciding exposure. That's okay. What we're gonna call this one. Episode 32.
Okay. Now 32. I understand, though.
There you go. So, welcome to the show. Let's talk about what did you shoot this week.
I shot some pictures for the photo challenge, as always.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't actually shoot a whole lot of pictures last few days. My family has been out of town, so those are usually where I take most of my pictures. So, I was able to get a few pictures off for the photo challenge before they left. And last few days, I've been, kicking my feet up on the couch and eating a block of cheese.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah, I didn't take any pictures of the block of cheese, though. I should have.
That's Canadian cheddar?
Yes.
Awesome.
How about yourself?
Well, all we get here is that, you know, Gouda and Brie and all that nonsense. Just kidding. It's awesome.
Okay.
Are we still talking cheese?
No. I thought, what did you take for pictures? Because I said I really didn't take many pictures this week.
Oh, I thought it was the Two Hosers cheese show.
I only eat cheddar.
Yeah, great. We're all on pins and needles there, waiting to find out the rest of that story. Yeah, I took some pictures this week, of course, you know, family stuff. My dad's here in Germany visiting, so took a lot of stuff with him and the baby and my wife. And, well, you can put together all your different combinations. You can imagine how that goes.
Right.
I took some for the photo challenge, of course. I've been actually hired, got quite a few paying jobs this last week.
Well, that's good. It's podcast money rolling in.
That's the podcast really paying off. No, these are German speakers. They don't even know I have a podcast, and they have no clue what that even means. So, so I've had quite a few paying gigs and quite a few more coming up. It's going to end up being a lot more busy around here, which is excellent.
Good.
So, yeah.
Anything photo-wise that you can take away from recent events?
Nothing new. It's been similar to what we talked about on the last show. Is when you're dealing with kids, like not just babies, like newborns, but also kids up to the age of three and stuff. Like people, when you're doing family portraits, work as fast as you can. That's why we want you to get comfortable with your camera, because once you get the button mashing out of the way, you need to be able to operate very quickly because you have such a short window of opportunity with kids.
Well, and I think the same goes for people too. I ran into a few friends in Steveston the other day, and it was perfect time of the evening, and they were sort of standing together, and it was a family, mom and dad and daughter all grown ups. And I said, oh, can I take your picture? And when I said that, I quickly realized that I had better do this quickly because I asked them, and I'm sure they're not going to want to hang around while I set things up and spend 15 minutes posing them. So I did an all of, you know, probably a minute. And yep. I took four pictures, and I was thrilled with the results. So
I saw them. They are excellent.
Thank you.
I feel the same way, but on the other hand, sometimes I have to remind myself, and this is going to sound terrible, but I really do mean it, that some people are actually lucky that I'm taking their picture.
True, but I guess it depends on do they ask you or are you asking them?
Yes, but you're getting to the point where you take very good pictures. So getting your picture taken by Adam is actually a treat.
I think so, but they might not know that until afterwards. Yeah.
Well, we have to learn them up on that because that's what I find. If you work too fast, like if you get it down to 1 minute, the next time they expect 45 seconds.
Right.
And there's kind of that middle ground where, you know, obviously half an hour is too long if they don't see you doing anything. But if you're actually making adjustments and fine tweaks and stuff and appear to be know what you're doing, you can get away with 15 minutes.
Really?
I recommend going faster. With adults, with kids, they don't care. That's what I find.
Okay.
I'm not saying lengthen it out. If you can get it, you know, shorter the better. But you can get away with more.
Well, I was super happy. I think if I had taken more pictures, I would have just had the previous problem we discussed, which is sorting through 20 pictures that all more or less look the same and, you know, trying to figure out which one is the best.
Right. Good point.
So
last week we talked about our five bad habits.
I fixed them all.
Yeah, I got nothing now. Zero bad habits. Except for modesty. That's my only bad habit.
Right.
But I feel like when I was making my list, I actually came up with a lot more than five.
I'm just not sure what's a bad habit because, again, I think as a relatively new SLR photographer, sometimes I'm not aware of what I'm doing wrong.
There you go. Good point.
So, in my mind, again, I've solved everything.
You need your wife to get more aware and then sit over your shoulder and nag you.
That's true. Yeah. She probably would do that, too, if I asked her.
Look at that guy. Look at that husband. He's a way better photographer. Why can't you be more like him?
Why don't you have that gigantic lens that he has?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we got a bunch of feedback from last week's episode and some other email before the episode. I meant to read, you know, some of the emails from the listeners' bad habits, and so we picked one out. You picked one out, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I did.
I like how I asked you that. I already knew the answer, yet I asked you anyway. You picked one out, didn't you?
Yeah, and I guess you're asking me to read it?
If you want. You want to read it?
Okay, this is...
I sound like the most condescending question asker ever.
This is from Josh, and it says, we don't have to read the part where he just adores me. So we'll just say, my bad habit is that I tend to auto bracket way too much when I shoot landscapes. I dial everything in how I want it, and then I still bracket it just to be safe. What makes it worse is that I don't spend enough time examining the bracketed shots to learn which one was best and understand why.
Right. Now, have you ever used the auto bracket before?
I never have. Yeah,
bracket's a pretty cool little feature on your camera.
Okay.
Essentially, what it does is you can set it to take. Usually, it's three pictures. Some of them more fancier type cameras could be five or seven. I really don't know. But essentially, what it is you make use of your motor drive, or whatever you want to call it, burst mode, and you can set your camera to what we call bracket the exposures, which means it'll take your normal exposure and it'll then take one overexposed and then one underexposed, all in rapid succession.
Right. Okay.
And you can determine how much overexposed. You can say bracket by 2/3 of a stop or up to two stops over, two stops under.
Right.
And what it does is, like, let's say you're shooting in AV mode, it determines the proper exposure. You're shooting at an F4, let's say 1/100th of a second. It shoots that exposure, and then it will change the shutter speed to allow more light in, and then change it again to allow less light in, but the F4 will stay the same.
Right, okay, yeah.
And the opposite is true in TV mode and in shutter priority. It'll change the aperture.
Okay, yeah.
But oftentimes you fall into the bad habit like Josh talks about, where you go ahead and do that, does everything for you. You just pick the picture you like and delete the others, but you don't stop to figure out what it was that caused that picture to be the one you liked or something like that.
Right.
So you end up, the bad habit is you end up not really learning from the picture mistakes that you make.
You're kind of just putting a safety net there just in case you were wrong in your initial choice.
That's a great analogy, actually. It's like you're on the trapeze and you keep falling off and landing in the net. And it doesn't matter as long as you keep landing in the net.
I made the mistake of giving you an opening for an analogy there.
See, the mistake you made, it's sort of like... What?
All right.
So I don't auto bracket. I tried it out. I didn't like it for that very reason, because it kind of took too much control out of my hands, and you end up having to sift through pictures later.
Well, that's what I was saying. You end up with if you do that and you go out and take 200 shots, well, now you just have 600, right?
Well, the good news is like if you use any kind of program to sort them, like Aperture or something like that, you can set Aperture to group pictures together based on time of exposure, like with the time they were taken.
Oh, I see.
So any picture that was taken within, let's say you set the margin of 1 second of another one, it will just assume it's like the same photo. So it'll stack it up. And so every burst that you make, you can go through and just pick out the best of that those three photos.
I see.
Still a lot of work, and I don't like doing it.
So just get it right. That's what you're saying.
Get it right.
Okay.
This week's photo challenge. What did we? Did I challenge you? Did you challenge me last week?
I think this was yours. I would have never thought. I would have never thought to do this picture.
This one's convoluted a little bit. That's right. This week's challenge is to intentionally underexpose.
Right.
The photo.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean? Like what I didn't explain myself to you. You just went out and did it, and I'm very impressed. Looks great.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about my picture first, or are you going to explain exactly what it is we're talking about altogether?
Let's talk about your picture first. Let's talk about Jack.
Okay. So I took the picture of Jack in our living room at about 10 a.m. and what I did was basically close all the blinds, because there's window light off to his left, so camera right, and again just opened a couple of cracks in the blinds and to let light in on him, and then took the shot exposing or underexposing, I guess. So I sort of fiddled it around with the manual settings in order to get the background sort of exposure where I wanted it, and then of course the light then shines in on him and sort of illuminates his face and his body.
Looks great.
Yeah, so that's what I did. Now would you like to know more particulars?
Would you have ever shot this without it being a specific challenge?
I have once. Again, I had done this previously with Jack probably 6 months ago, again, because he likes to play in the living room, and often he's playing with little toy cars, and 5 minutes before this, he was playing with toy cars, and again, just knowing that time of day where the light comes through the window like that, I had done those pictures, similar pictures to that before, and I loved the effect. So as soon as you made that challenge, I said, oh, I remember how to do that, and I just set it up that way.
Nice.
So yeah.
This is something that your camera is not going to do on its own.
No,
and by comparison, no, that's the same thing. By the same token, you often, most people think, and I'm guilty of this myself, is you start to think like the camera thinks, and you would not think of this as being your objective, is to underexpose the bulk of the frame. You want to usually expose for the face, and you want to see as much as you can. Now, that would result in his right leg and the top of his arm being wildly overexposed instead of just slightly overexposed.
Right.
But you would get the image that you think of, exposed for the face. So that's why I love this picture, too, because it's not something that you would have set out to do normally.
Yes, no, it's not at all. And I took a couple of pictures there, and I think I might have explained. I was looking at the settings there was as I was explaining it, and basically, I think for settings there, what I did was shutter speed of 1/100th of a second at an ISO of 400 there, I think is where I set it, an aperture of 4.5, and then I just aimed it, and then I just basically aimed the focus on him after I'd done the settings. So I tinkered around a little bit, but yeah, that's where I ended up.
Nice. So that was in full manual mode.
That's full manual mode, yeah. Because like you say, I think the camera in AV mode constantly is metering to make an adjustment that's going to be more exposed, right?
Right. Yeah, your camera's going to want to even everything out.
Yeah. So I think I started there, tried two shots, and realized there's no way I'm going to get there this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then went direct to manual.
Great. So what you did, I mean, first of all, well, some key points. You want to override the camera's decision. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Is first of all, go into this photo with this in your mind. Envision this before you start shooting. And now we're going to completely override the camera's decision. And that's we can do that in a number of ways. I chose manual as well when I shot mine. But you can shoot it on AV using a couple of different methods.
If you aim your target at the darkness and then do the focus and recompose, is that what you mean?
Yep, you'd do the opposite. You'd aim at the light.
Oh, okay.
And you would then expose for the brightest brights, and then by default, the darks are going to fall off into darkness as you recompose. So you could focus and recompose.
Okay.
Not focus, sorry. Basically meter and recompose.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can change your metering, we've talked about before, into a spot metering instead of an evaluative metering.
Right.
That's kind of getting tricky because if you forget to set it back, you can really mess up some of your pictures later on and not know why.
Yeah.
But I've been using spot metering a lot. Like if I were to look at my camera right now, I bet you it's set on spot meter as a default. I'm just starting to get a lot more comfortable with how the camera meters that way. And it's just, if you know how your camera meters in terms of the evaluative, you know where to point the camera to get the metering you want. And you know how much exposure compensation to dial in.
Okay.
So that's one way to do it. But again, I chose to do this manually.
I think I might have confused people a little bit when I was talking about the trains, but what he's actually holding there in his hand is like just, you know, that wooden sort of train track, which I took a few pictures and some of them include the trains in the picture, some of them don't. This one just includes pieces of the track, so he's piecing that together. So that's probably where a little bit of the confusion came in. I think some people might have put that together, but yeah, he's putting together a wooden train track.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So let's bring up my picture.
Okay, which is...
This one is of my dad.
Yeah. Yankee Stadium?
Is it a Yankee Stadium?
I don't know. That's kind of what it looks like. He's coming in out from... like he's a pitcher, and he's coming out of the dugout.
That's what I was going for. We're not at Yankee Stadium. I did shoot this week specifically for the challenge. But I just saw a spot in our basement, actually, that looked... really cool.
Yeah, I love it.
And so I had him put my Yankee hat on and a gray shirt, and we set it up that way. So,
and what were you going for here in terms of like how much light you decided? Because I imagine you took a bunch of these, and in some cases, you know, there's more light on them, and some there's less. And so, you know, what was your ideal?
Well, I don't want to ruin the surprise. Ruin the story by telling the truth, but I'm going to anyway. That's what the show is about, right?
I guess.
Okay. In order to get this shot just right, I had to actually have him squat down and lean against the wall because he's actually much taller than that. Like not taller than the window, but he would basically be up much higher.
Right.
And since this is in the basement, the light was falling almost directly down, and so if he was standing up, no light would hit him or the hat. And so I had him squat down to make it look like he's looking up and out.
I see.
So what I looked for when I went in there is obviously I looked for a high contrast situation, like much like you did.
Yeah.
And so in order to have the bulk of the image be dark or what we would basically call underexposed, you need a lot of brights and a lot of darks in the same scene. That's what we look for.
Okay.
From there, you have to decide what is it that you want to be properly exposed. Now, I didn't want to just have like an underexposed picture where I just took a regular photo and underexposed it by three stops. Because then it looks kind of muddy and not very good. It looks like you made a mistake.
Right.
I wanted to add kind of different tones and have, you know, sort of a certain texture to the light. Like it came in with that slash of light across his right shoulder. And I also knew that the New York logo on his hat, being white, would pop out. And that way it would kind of fill in some of the darkness.
You should clean the windowsill.
Yeah. If I lived down there, I would probably do that. But that's actually the laundry room, and guess who does not do laundry?
Lena?
Answer, me.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, that's the laundry room where you can hang stuff up, but no one does because it's kind of dark, I think. So
don't hang anything up by the windowsill.
Will not do that. So, yeah, I wanted to keep some reference points in there to know that there actually was light, that it wasn't just a picture of a dark room.
Right.
And in order to, I shot manual. I think I mentioned that earlier. But what was really important is that I didn't want to shoot, 500 pictures and just chimp the whole time until I got it dialed in. Because, like you said earlier, my dad didn't want to spend half an hour doing this.
Yeah.
And so I did meter it using the spot meter. And part of it was I metered for the bright light on the coming from the window. And I quickly metered for that, and that's where I set my exposure. And then the rest sort of fell off.
Perfect.
So that's it.
I really like it.
You want to be able to have the confidence. This is where I don't always do this. I'm actually, to toot my own horn, I'm pretty proud of this picture. I'm gonna hang on to this one for my own file, for my own, maybe put it on the wall, I don't know. But I'm pretty proud of how it went. Because determining where your facial, where the face exposure will lay in your picture.
Yeah.
Like if I were to tell you that, it's probably at least two stops underexposed on purpose, would that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I know it makes sense that it's underexposed, but exactly how far to push it under is kind of what you have to decide going in.
Well, congratulations.
All right.
I'm not sure that I win this week. So I think you might have this one.
I like yours as well, but yours was difficult because you have such a bright spotlight there.
Yeah. If I could have done without the bright light on his right knee so much, I would have been even happier with this, because I love the way his face got illuminated with that sort of rim lighting around his face. But
I'm assuming, I was going to mention that. Thanks for bringing that up, because the backlighting on his left shoulder and his head are spectacular. Really, really well done. Like that really has texture to it, that light.
Yeah.
And then the light on his face is, I'm assuming, the hard light coming from outside bouncing off the floor.
I don't know. I guess so.
That has to be bounced, because if you look closely, the light on his back is a little bit, it looks bluish to me.
Yeah, not, I agree. Yeah,
slightly blue. Okay, I'm colorblind, so I'm guessing.
Yeah, it is.
And then the light on his face is much warmer, like almost as if it's being reflected off a hardwood floor.
Yeah, it probably is. That makes sense.
That looks just fantastic. This is something that I would, if I was you, I would try again and try to mask off the hard light on his leg and his arm. Yet I would leave it on the floor, because it creates that depth to the picture by breaking up the floor, which otherwise would be very, very dark all the way across.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
And that's something I would try again, because I think it looks fantastic.
Okay.
But with Sarah this time.
Yes, I will. I'll try it with Sarah.
Maybe she could do a little bit better. Thanks a lot, Jack. Thanks for letting me down.
Yeah, he's only two, so he has some work to do.
Well, that's what's going to happen. So, any more questions on how to make this happen?
No, I think we get it.
That's great. So, in the spirit of the short summer season here, the short summer shows, we're going to keep this one tight.
Okay.
That's the plan for the next few shows, by the way, in case you're wondering why we haven't babbled on and on and on.
We're going to try to keep it under what's the time frame here?
I'm going to shoot for 30 minutes.
Really?
Not going to happen.
No, because you'll get close and then you'll figure out something in the way of a story about you going to Munich that drags on for 17 minutes.
Did I tell you about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think you told me.
It is the greatest beer garden I've ever been to.
Right.
I would hopefully you can come here one day. Leave the family at home because they're just going to drag you down.
Okay.
Just kidding. Does your wife listen?
No.
Oh, okay. Then never mind. there is the beer garden. Everyone goes to the Hofbrauhaus. That's the kind of the touristy place, and it's awesome. I recommend going. But we took someone else's advice and checked out this one called the Augustiner Beer Garden.
Okay.
And you walk in, and I expected it to be sort of like, you know, like a pub in Richmond and Steveston or something with like some sort of, you know, a beer garden on Canada Day.
Yeah.
Not reality.
Okay.
How many people would you guess were in this one beer garden?
1,000.
8,000 people.
Wow.
That's the capacity. 8,000 people on these benches and all drinking the 1 liter beers called Ein Maß.
There's a lot of drunk drivers.
No, a lot of drunk bicycle riders.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but the Augustiner Keller, the beer garden, located directly next to the main train station.
Really?
Perfect. So get on the train station and go.
Is there like a lot of noticeably intoxicated people?
Yes and no. It's different than in Canada. In Canada, we have some pretty strict rules, and for some reason, when everyone gets drunk in public, it turns into just a meathead festival. It doesn't happen here in Germany.
Oh, I envisioned everybody in Germany, you know, getting ripped up in that scenario and arm wrestling or something like that.
I think that would be fine, but the drunken fist fights don't really occur. Apparently, they do in Oktoberfest. It's nonstop, but. During the regular Tuesday evening, this is a Tuesday afternoon, we went and had
beer with 8,000 people.
It was jammed. You could not find a seat. Like we had to walk around and ask a bunch of people, and finally they let us sit down next to them. Yeah, and then I had to go get into almost a fight to get the beer. That was the thing. Once you have the beer, no problem. Getting the beer, fist fight.
Is there anything else for sale at the beer garden? Like, can you get sausages?
Oh yeah, yeah. We had sausage and sauerkraut. And I don't know the name of it because it's in Bavarian, and Bavarian isn't the same as German. Like, it is German, but it's like, I don't know, what they speak in Newfoundland versus Vancouver, I guess.
Right.
And so I didn't really understand what I was getting. It was some sort of a meat thing, like meatballs, something. And so I just ordered that. I didn't care. I said, it's got to be good. People like the food here because turns out salt and fat taste good.
There's a spoiler. Spoiler alert.
So there you go. That's it. You got a challenge for next week?
Yes, I do, actually. And I came up with this on my very own.
Good to hear.
The challenge will be to take a picture where there's a very deep range of focus.
A deep, like a very, very deep depth of field.
Well, yeah, because we've had a lot of pictures I think we've used in challenges past where we're taking, you know, pictures with very narrow depth of field. And I think we both, in our five bad habits, you know, rationalize that we tend to be bokeh junkies and take a lot of pictures with a very narrow depth of field. So how about we try to go the other way?
Love it.
Okay.
You love it. That's actually a really good challenge.
Well, sometimes I've got some good ideas.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day, man.
All right. That's a good analogy.
Great. I didn't make that one up. So until next week, Adam, where can people find you and your stuff?
As always, schwartzchronicles.com.
Or on the couch eating a block of cheese.
Where I'll be in about 5 minutes from now.
.com. .org. I think that's a .org.
And how about your stuff?
You can find me, as always, at alanattridge.com. The two of us are twohosers.com, two hosers on Twitter. You can go to our site on the .com and find our Flickr link. You can find all you need to know at twohosers.com. So that should be about it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.